Wait a second. No, it's not Friday. Cut the music! I'm sorry about that, Truth Seekers. It is Monday! Well, see, we had such a good time here Friday that the music stayed queued up. And anyway, here we are. Welcome to tonight's program. It is Monday. Honest to God, it is Monday the 23rd. Did you have a nice Earth Day? Going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later on tonight. Not about Earth Day, but what I did on Earth Day, which I know you will be very happy to hear about. It is 7 minutes past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tanya Vallejo, who writes, "Join me, Malloy fans, in sending $5 a night, which is $100 a month to keep this fantastic program going. We need one voice of sanity on the radio." Well, thank you, Tanya. Do you have potassium iodide pills? You may need them soon. Potassium iodide, you know what I'm talking about? They kind of guard your thyroid against radiation poisoning and thyroid cancer, right? Well, I got an email from a friend today who tells me to make sure I have my potassium iodide pills and to watch as the zany fun ensues. Now, what is my friend talking about? Well, 13 months since the Fukushima reactors exploded, we have a U.S. senator who finally went to Japan to see what was going on over there. Yeah, 13 months. Nobody, no legislator from the United States has cared enough to even take a look. So anyway, the senator describes what he saw as horrific. And he's now saying that we are in big trouble. He sent a letter to the U.S. ambassador to Japan and Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the NRC's Chairman Gregory Jasko. You can find it online if you're interested. But as reported at the intelhub.com, what is so ironic about this is that we have been in this trouble since March of 2011, March 17th to be exact, when the plume of radioactive materials began bombarding the west coast of California and Oregon and Washington and British Columbia and later Maine, Europe, and everywhere in between. Independent researchers, nuclear experts, scientists from oceanography to entomology and all disciplines in between have been trying to sound the alarm for the past year. The scientists most upset are those who have studied the effects of radiation in health, and as a result of what they have and are discovering, we are in deep doo-doo. The most preliminary reports of soil contamination are starting to come in from the U.S. Geological Society, which has seemed either reluctant to share this information or the media are reluctant to get it out. And maybe it's not that big of a deal. I mean, you decide. L.A., Portland, Boulder, Colorado so far have the highest radioactive particle contamination of the entire United States. And just about everywhere they have tested in this country, they have found, they being the nuclear scientists, have found contamination from Fukushima. And according to the intelhub.com, what is even more alarming about the numbers coming in is that they are from samples taken April 5th of last year, a year ago. Now, Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, has only recently confirmed that there were three, count them, three meltdowns. And they have been ongoing, unabated, for 13 months. And no successful effort has been made to contain them. What? I don't know why I'm laughing. TEPCO apparently just keeps dumping water on these three melted down nuclear reactors. And then they let it go into the ocean and steam up through the ground every second, every day. This jet stream and a highly dynamic portion of our atmosphere called the troposphere have been swirling around massive amounts of radioactive particles and settling them out, mostly in rain, over the entire, northern hemisphere, especially the west coast of North America, from Alaska down to Baja and even further. What's in this stuff? Iodine, cesium, strontium, plutonium, uranium, and a host of other fission products that have been coming directly from Japan to the west coast for 13 months. Anyone here see any irony in this? I mean, when you can say, I'm not going to laugh at the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. I can't do that. But the way the United States unnecessarily delivered two nuclear bombs on Japan in 1945, all those years ago. And now look what's coming at us from Japan all these years later. Oops! Oops, oops, oops! Maybe you have heard about sick seals and polar bears and fish that are getting weird and mutations and dandelions and fruits and vegetables and seaweed and yada, yada, yada. Anyone here know what a becquerel is? It's a measurement of radioactivity, apparently. I never heard the term until Fukushima. Scientific American magazine several weeks ago reported that the kelp from Corona del Mar off the coast of California contained 40 million becquerels per kilogram of radioactive iodine. Now, is that a lot? I don't know. Apparently it is. But this kind of kelp is what Pacific fish feed on. And that was only one isotope reported, radioactive iodine. There were up to 1,600 different isotopes that have been floating. I don't know. I guess when you're staring a disaster in the face like this one, silent, invisible, just click, click, click on a Geiger counter, I guess you kind of giggle and go, whoops, we're all going to die. Reports in the past week indicate the pollen in Southern California is now showing trace radioactivity also. And it's, you know, flying around like it does here in Georgia. And if you go outside, if you live there and you go outside, you're breathing it in. And, so are your children. So, fission products are blowing this way from Japan. And, getting radiation and drinking water in your rain and the fish you're eating and vegetables and the milk supply is happening every second, every day for 13 months. You starting to see a problem here? Ron Wyden, what he's all bent out of shape about. Even, it's because independent researchers and nuke experts have been warning about this for a year. And that is that the nuclear reactor in building number 4 is on the verge of collapsing. So now you know, and if you didn't before know all this, we are in big trouble. So the best advice is to get informed, start paying attention to this. Get canned goods, as Prairie 2 has been telling us for a couple of years now. This may be the most important thing you ever pay any attention to, and for the sake of your family, your friends, your neighbors, everyone you know, and meet all of humanity, find out what's going on. It's been 13 months, and you might have some catching up to do. Boy, my goodness.
Joy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. So, you know, we don't, you notice there's no real discussion about Fukushima anymore. The discussion is about this crazy-ass lying freak, Romney, and the teenager that apparently is going to run with him, Marco Polo. And, you know, like, who cares? I mean, really, who cares? Go away! Go away! Oh, my God! It is scary, and as my friend wrote to me, it is bowel-loosening scary. You know what that means? Woo! Russia recently, according to published reports, was stunned after this Japanese plan to evacuate 40 million people was revealed. You heard about that? Apparently, a new report circulating at the highest levels of the Russian government, prepared by the Russian foreign minister, on the planned reopening of talks with Japan over the Kuril Islands. Both countries claim those islands. And according to EU Times, the Russian diplomats were stunned, that's their word, after being told by their Japanese counterparts that upwards of 40 million people in Japan were in, quote, extreme danger, end quote, of life-threatening radiation poisoning and could very well likely be faced with forced evacuations away from Japan's easternmost located cities, including the world's largest city, Tokyo. The Kuril Islands are located in Russia's Sakhalin Oblast region, if you're keeping track, and stretch about 800 miles northeast from Hokkaido, Japan, to Kamchatka, Russia, in the north. Well, it separates the Sea of Okhotsk from the North Pacific Ocean. There are 56 islands. And all of which were captured by Soviet forces in the closing days of World War II from the Japanese. Now, the extreme danger, quote, quote, facing tens of millions of the Japanese people as a result of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster, of course. According to the report, to this report that's circulating among the Russian diplomats, Japanese leaders have signaled to the Russian counterparts that the returning of the Kuril Islands to Japan is, quote, critical, end quote, as they have no other place to resettle so many people. And if this is put into effect, who knows? It would become the world's largest migration of human beings since the 1930s when Stalin forced tens of millions of people to resettle in Russia's far eastern regions, you know, Siberia and places like that. Now, you know, who are you going to believe, right? We don't hear anything about this. We don't know anything about this. And what the hell is the intelhub.com? Well, I don't know. But if you go there, theintelhub.com, you'll find a link to the letter sent by Ron Wyden to U.S. Ambassador to Japan, Secretary of Energy and Secretary of State, and the NRC's chairman here in the United States, a copy of this letter. And you can, you know, make your own decision. Just read it your own funky self and see what you come up with. But again, you know, without making light of anything at all, because this carries with the potential for real horror. But, you know, that old argument that there was no need to wipe out two Japanese cities at the end of World War II and kill ultimately half a million civilians. If we really wanted to have impressed the Japanese military command, dropping one of these nuclear bombs on an uninhabited island someplace would have been sufficient, I think, not what I think, what a lot of historians and experts think, that would have been sufficient to bring the war to a close. The way the history, of course, is spun now is that the only way to have prevented the deaths of a million Americans that would have resulted with the invasion of the Japanese homeland, the only way to prevent that was to have nuked two cities. Now, if you want to believe that, go ahead, you know. But, you know, if you don't believe that, if you don't accept that as received wisdom, then somehow you are betraying, I guess, all the people who died in the Pacific War fighting the Japanese military, you know, which is madness to me. I mean, the whole thing is madness. The war was madness. The death and destruction was madness. But the irony I find is that we unleashed, we being the United States, solely and alone, not with our allies, we unleashed radioactive death on Japan. Deliberately, inadvertently, Japan is now sending radioactive death this way. You find that ironic?
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Lord, there goes Johnny Appleseed. 25 before the hour. So that's a hell of a way to start a Monday, isn't it? To start a brand new week. We just don't hear anything about Fukushima, do we? I mean, we just celebrated the anniversary of the second year since the blowout in the Gulf of Mexico. Oil. You know, oil. Everything's okay. Come on down. Come swimming. Yeehaw. It must be just terrifying right now to live in Japan. It just seems to me almost, I don't know, beyond comprehension. This hour, by the way, is sponsored by Tanya Vallejo, who writes, "Join me, Malloy fans, in sending $5 a night, which is $100 a month to keep this fantastic program going. We need one voice of sanity on the radio." It's very kind, Tanya. I don't know if anybody can do that, but thank you very much for the sponsorship and the nice thought. I wonder why, seriously, I wonder why, for example, on the network Sunday chat shows that, you know, start polluting the airwaves bright and early Sunday, you have local right-wing television chat shows, then you go to the network, mostly conservative chat shows. It doesn't make any difference if it's ABC, NBC, CBS, or whatever. I usually will watch CBS Sunday morning and then bail out! You know, sit there and have a second cup of coffee. I love that show. Love it. But when these talk shows start, it's just inane garbage, isn't it? Have you learned anything from watching any of those Sunday morning talk shows? If you do, I don't know if you do, but I don't think in all the years I've watched, I'm trying to remember, nothing stands out. Just a bunch of network talking heads who interview mostly white male conservative guests. And, you know, any question that is asked in an attempt to evoke a straightforward, factual, information-bearing answer is shuffled aside, or, you know, you get some half-assed reply. So why not be devoting, since the rest of the week is all caught up in, you know, other stuff, why not be devoting the Sunday talk shows to this disaster in Fukushima, Japan? And I asked the question seriously, looking for some kind of an answer. I don't know. Oh, by the way, not that it really matters worth a damn, but just in the sense of maybe clearing out a little bit of historical misstatement. Remember the charge that Iran's President Ahmadinejad had talked about Israel need to be wiped off the face of the map or wiped out? Remember that? And a lot of people said, well, no, the Persian or the Farsi is being mistranslated. He didn't say that. And, of course, oh, no, yes, he did. Recently, according to Al Jazeera, Al Jazeera and other places, Israel's Minister of Intelligence and Atomic Energy made an unexpected admission in an interview with Al Jazeera. He conceded that, contrary to popular belief and much political fanfare, Iran's president had never promised to, quote, wipe out the state of Israel, end quote. The guy is Dan Meridor. You've probably heard his name. And his statement has been judged as both consequential and irrelevant in equal measure. But the most interesting result of the admission has been the way the spin machine has managed to slip back into gear so quickly, smoothing over the implications of what Meridor said and rushing out new lines and new assertions to reinforce the same message. Brings to mind George Orwell. As Al Jazeera says, George Orwell was not alone in recognizing how, in politics as in marketing, the cunning formulation of words can initiate a reliable pattern of behavior. Emotional response generates a favored interpretation, which leads to accepted belief and ultimately to action. If it's in advertising, the ultimate action, of course, is you buy the product. If it is politics, if your emotional response is disgust, terror, horror, anger, revulsion, whatever, that triggers the belief. Oh, my God, he said that? That dirty Iranian said that? Well, of course he did, except he didn't. As Al Jazeera says in the controversy of wipe off the map, and in the reams of comment and argument that followed the Meridor interview, Dan Meridor, we see this process of thought corruption in action. Now, it must be said that Israel was not responsible for putting any words into the mouths of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The original translation of his comments was provided by Iran's own government staff. And by the time the inaccuracy was noted and a precise translation was at hand, it was too late. What did Mark Twain say? A lie travels halfway around the world before the truth even gets out of bed in the morning. Aided by the media, it says here, Israel had adopted the phrase at face value and had worked hard to establish it in mainstream public consciousness, which they have done. A pithy phrase does have a habit of sticking in the mind, and once this one found root, it became the basis upon which an entire anti-Iran narrative was built. A recent piece in the New York Times demonstrates how it's built. The piece, a blog by Robert McKee, begins with a precisely worded statement of fact. Here it is. Quote, although there is general agreement now among the translators and scholars that Mr. Ahmadinejad did not commit his country to the project of destroying the state of Israel in that 2005 speech, the phrase that was wrongly attributed to him then remains so firmly rooted in the popular imagination that it is frequently used as evidence of Iran's genocidal intentions. McKee, in his blog, references Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to Washington, D.C., in which he gave President Barack Obama a copy of the biblical Book of Esther. And he states baldly that the book, quote, recounts the tale of a Persian leader who wanted to annihilate the Jews, end quote. Then follows a quote from Netanyahu, quote, then, too, they wanted to wipe us out, end quote. But neither of these assertions are correct. In January, Ehud Barak, the Israeli defense minister, told a New York Times magazine writer, quote, the Iranians are, after all, a nation whose leaders have set themselves a strategic goal of wiping Israel off the map, end quote. That was reported in the Times. So having earlier debunked the wipe-off-the-map story, the Times then reinstates it through the mouth of Ehud Barak. So now you have Israel's own Minister of Intelligence and Atomic Energy, Dan Meridor, making the statement that Iran's president never said what has become absolute truth, right? I mean, how do you undo this now? You can't. It's too late. It has become received wisdom, the factual translation, whatever it is. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said, Iran will wipe Israel off the map, except for one slight thing. He didn't. He never did. As many people who looked at the original translation tried to say, of course, it doesn't matter. The truth doesn't matter. What matters is whatever you can convince people is the truth. That's all that matters. If 2 + 2 = 4, don't forget, just remember, remember O'Brien, remember Winston Smith. I see five fingers, but do you really, Winston? Or are you just saying that? No, I see them. Are you sure? You have to see them. Well, the next time somebody tells you what Iran said, you might remind them or tell them what Dan Meridor, the Israeli Minister of Intelligence, said. Sometimes again it seems all I have is worth. Then you finally see my other side. Yeah, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. This hour has been sponsored by Tanya Vallejo, who writes, join me, Molloy fans, in sending $5 a night, which is $100 a month, to keep this fantastic program going. We need one voice of sanity on the radio. Well, thank you, Tanya. It's a wonderful thought, and I do appreciate it. Most of my fans, though, I don't think, or not fans, I mean listeners, I don't think could do $100 a month. But it's a good idea, and I appreciate the fact that you thought of this. Thank you very much, Tanya. Thanks for your sponsorship. During the break, Reg, you know, I keep asking why isn't this being discussed? TV News Lies had something a couple of weeks ago about this same story, but Reg writes, maybe the reason is this, and she sent me a link. From a couple of months ago, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, remember this, approved the nation's first nuclear power plant in a generation. Atlanta-based Southern Company, the biggest, the most major polluter on Earth, the Southern Company. Not on Earth, in the United States, the Southern Company, has been given permission to build two reactors at the Plant Vogtle site near Augusta, Georgia. Now, that sits right on the Savannah River, which is one of the boundaries between South Carolina and Georgia. And that flows into, of course, the Atlantic, just a bit north of Savannah, Georgia. And years 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 ago, back in the mid-70s, that's one of the first places I got arrested for protesting the fact that at Barnwell, South Carolina, there was to be a nuclear repository one of the reasons of the protest was because the potential for horrific disaster. Now, there was leakage from that storage facility, and years and years and years and years and years ago, I can remember the Savannah River was very, 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 very hot, and as it emptied into the Atlantic Ocean, there was nothing at the sort of estuary there. No sand dollars, no seashells, no seabirds, no fish, no seaweed, no porpoises, no, just nothing. Now, it kind of, sort of, got cleaned up a bit. But now Plant Vogtle is going to build two more nuclear reactors. So, as Reg suggests at TVNewsLies.org, that's one of the reasons that there's no discussion about it. And, of course, the comment, one of the Nuclear Regulatory Commissioners, the chairman, Gregory Jagzo, said he couldn't vote to approve it. And he said that he wouldn't vote for the licensing without a commitment from Southern Company that would make safety changes prompted by the disaster in Japan. And, of course, Southern Company President and CEO Thomas Fanning said the approval was, quote, a monumental accomplishment for the company and its partners in the nuclear industry. He said, we are committed to bringing these units online to deliver clean, safe, and reliable energy to our customers. Now, of course, Plant Vogtle sits on a fault line, an earthquake fault line that runs through South Carolina, Georgia. Oh, Jesus, why bother? So I agree with Reg that that's probably the reason we don't hear anything about the horror that has occurred in Japan. Remember Japan in the 80s? Oh, my God. High-flying Japan. Everything is going great. This is before China, so to speak. Japan had the high-tech industry nailed. And everything was Japanese. And the Japanese were flush with money, kind of like the United States after after World War II, we were the only country, and Canada, and Mexico, and I guess South America. Come on, Mike. We were the major industrial country, though, along with Canada, that hadn't been attacked and bombed and burned and blown up and so on and so forth. But Japan was the major force. Remember all the predictions about Japan? I remember the cover of Time magazine. Do you remember this? Nah, you don't remember this. It said Japan Inc., I-N-C, Japan Incorporated. And now this, after a horrific recession in Japan that went on for like 15 years, with just zero growth, a total stagnation, and then this, and it must be very, very, very disconcerting to be Japanese and to realize, as best you can, if you can get the truth, who knows what kind of reports the Japanese people are getting from TEPCO, from their own government. But if truth is getting to the people of Japan, how horrible. I mean, think about it. Japan is geographically what? The bit bigger than California? I mean, isn't it? Or not? I don't know. Twice as big? It's not very big, geographically speaking, country, is it? So, we're not going to talk about that here in the United States. No, not going to talk about that. Because the nuclear industry is revving up for another go at it. Safe, wonderful, clean, secure, glorious nuclear power. So cheap, it'll cost you pennies a year. Why? They'll run lines of electricity from the nuclear generating power station right to your house. Honest to God. But they need several billion, hundreds of billions to build it, and they need the guarantee of the American taxpayer to pay for it if it doesn't work. You know, that's nuclear capitalism. We'll be right back. Welcome back into the warm embrace of the Molloy Program, where we talk to you about nuclear reactor meltdowns and the building of more nuclear reactors not far from the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains near the Molloy compound. Of course, the prevailing winds blow away from where we live, where it concerns the Plant Vogtle nuclear reactor. The prevailing winds, for the most part, blow southwest to northeast. So, whatever. This hour is sponsored by Tim. Tim? Yes, Tim in L.A. Well, thank you, Tim. Tim is one of the regulars in the Molloy chat room. Tim writes, thank you, Mike, Kathy, and Miss Molly, for reading my diatribe on the air for so many years. I appreciate it. Your show is very important. Also, on April 28th, that'll be Saturday, in the desert of Central California is the 43rd anniversary of the Manzanar pilgrimage. This is in remembrance of the concentration camps during World War II. For more information, go to tinyurl.com/no-more-camps. And please support Margot Paez's independent news site. That would be, of course, insightoutnews.org. How do you support her? Visit her site. And Margot needs donations to stay on the air also. Most liberals do. Most progressive or liberal programs do. We do not get the kind of institutional sponsorship that any lying, filthy, stinking right-winger gets automatically. Because the lying, stinking, filthy right-wingers do nothing but support the predatory practices of U.S. capitalism under all circumstances. When was the last time you listened to a right-wing radio show and heard the least criticism of corporate America? You simply do not. Unless it's Solyndra, you know, unless it's a company that tried to do something good for America. And then the pig man, the filthy, disgusting, drug-addled, deaf-by-choice pig man will attack with his tusks roaring. Oh, I don't want to talk about him. Roz in Canada writes, Mike, regarding Iran and the phrase regarding wiping Israel off the face of the map, Norman Finkelstein debunked that myth years ago, but the Likud louts kept on repeating it like so many parrots. Of course, once the message is firmly planted in the minds of the weak-minded, it is there to stay. Even Israel loves to use the rules of Hitler's propaganda chief. Ironic, is it not? Yeah, that's used constantly on American media. Tell the big lie often enough, and it becomes fact. And when you have a megaphone, like, for instance, the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization. And by the way, someone with a name like Steve Doocy should not be an anchor for anything. Doocy. I don't know what he should be. But not a television anchor. Steve Doocy. Really, Doocy? Hey, Doocy, what's up? When you have that kind of lying media that sets out deliberately to propagandize an entire society, yeah, you have to go to the authority, and that would be, was it Himmler? I think it was. Or was it Goering? Oh, who cares, right? Speaking of Fox lies, did you hear this this story? And again, the only reason I bring up this garbage is just, I don't know, it's kind of a warning. I think eventually Rupert Murdoch is going to go to prison. The investigation being conducted in the UK that has resulted in several dozen arrests now about illegal wiretapping conducted by the Rupert Murdoch Terror Organization in the UK is now starting to spread to this country, or has spread to this country. And I think the proof is going to show up. And once it does, of course, the other networks are going to fall on this story like, I don't know, ducks on a herd of June bugs. NBC, ABC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN. Once it becomes clear that the Fox organization, the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization, did in this country exactly what they did in the UK. The American media outlets are just waiting for this, and they're going to pounce. Of course, they have reason to pounce now, but they won't. Not until they have the cover of results of investigations, possible indictments, arrests, just like as has occurred in the United Kingdom. So if and when that happens in the United States, just watch what happens. And I'll be, you know, my little 25-cent radio program will be in the leading rank of that attack. Trust me. In a recent campaign speech, Obama delivered a line that was widely construed as a jab at Mitt Romney. Last Wednesday in Elyria, Ohio, discussing equality of opportunity, Obama said, quote, "Somebody gave me an education. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Michelle wasn't, but somebody gave us a chance, just like these folks up here are looking for a chance." And behind him were a bunch of, I think, graduates from community college or trade schools or what have you. Now, the silver spoon comment in the context of the speech, depending on how you were listening, may or may not have been a swipe at Romney. Mitt Romney, whose father, George Romney, of course, was a top executive, major car company, former governor of Michigan, blah, 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 blah. But Obama was certainly maintained plausible deniability I mean, if you look at the quote, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Somebody gave me an education. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Michelle wasn't, but somebody gave us a chance. But this freaky, strange, greasy-looking, dried-out prune of a man, Steve Doocy on Fox, came along and changed the quote completely. Now, this is what Fox does. They are lying, filthy sons of bitches at Fox. All of every single person who works there. I don't care what their capacity is. They are filthy propagandist liars. I don't even think any of them are American. While interviewing Romney on live TV Thursday, Doocy quoted Obama as saying, quote, unlike some people, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Unlike some people. Obama never prefaced his statement with the words, unlike some people. You can see it in the video. It's right there. And the words don't appear in the official transcript either. But it doesn't matter to this prunish-looking little turd Steve Doocy. That doesn't matter. Unlike some people, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, quote unquote. This is what they do. This is what Himmler did. This is what any terror propagandizing operation does, up to and including, or down to and including, the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization. So that was the original story. And now it appears that Doocy is drawing increasing criticism. The Washington Post picked up the story using the false quote, later correcting it. On Monday, the Post's Eric Wemple hit out at Doocy for the error. The guy writing the Post recommended that Doocy retract the smirk that accompanies his false question. But that's not a smirk. That is Doocy's face. It is a frozen rictus of that. He looks like somebody who just willingly ate a huge nightcrawler worm.
A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war. We know what you're fighting for.
It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Alan West, the freak from Florida, representative from Florida, Alan West, the military officer who was forced to resign or retire because he had an interesting way of torturing people in Iraq who had been charged with nothing. They were just scooped up like so many people the U.S. military scooped up in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, of course, West had the unnerving habit of pointing guns at people and threatening to kill them. And for that, he was told to get his ass out of the military, which he did and decided he would go become a member of Congress as a Republican, which he did. Now, you remember the other day when he was talking about communists in the Democratic caucus in the U.S. House? Yeah, I know. We heard this before back in the 50s. Well, some of us did, right? Yeah, okay. And Senator Joe McCarthy. Oh, Eisenhower's a communist. Eisenhower. State Department is loaded with communists. Communists in the highest command of the United States Army. I've said before, one of my earliest memories, I don't even know if it's a memory, it might have been something my mother told me, was sitting on the floor in our little apartment while she ironed and a little black and white TV was on in the background. And she was watching the Army McCarthy hearings. Senator McCarthy had sent out subpoenas to members of the United States Army, high-ranking members, to question them as to whether or not they were communists. So now, that was a million years ago. Now we have Representative Alan West. He was supposed to be the keynote speaker at a fundraiser for his district chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, 2 days ago. But a few days before the event, NAACP disinvited him and asked them not to come back when they rescheduled. Why? Well, Jerry Gore, the president of the Martin County NAACP, said there's a certain statement he made about communists. That statement alone, well, we do not represent that type of atmosphere. Remember when he told his whacked-out constituents at a town hall meeting in some godforsaken little crapwater town in central Florida that some 80 House Democrats are members of the Communist Party? It's called the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Not even Barney Frank would have said anything so stupid. And, of course, West just, you know, doubled down on the statement later. That's what these right-wing, crazed, freaked-out right-wingers do. Right-wing, crazed, freaked-out right-wingers. That's right. Yeah. That's what they do. They make a statement that is patently insane. And when it's pointed out to them that it's patently insane, they just repeat it. I'm not backing down. What a zoo. What a zoo that we live in. You know what I'm saying? Well, the political zoo. Meantime, we have the Fukushima Daiichi plant. Three meltdowns, looking for a fourth. And then it's, according to the experts, then it's trouble in River City. And just about every city on Earth, I guess. Two things when we come back after the next break. Well, I can give you a quick synopsis of this first one. Have you been to that website, peopleofwalmart.com? If you haven't been to that website, oh, my God, you need to go. But an investigation has been launched today into the Walmart bribery scandal, a congressional investigation. The story broke Saturday in a New York Times story that lays out how Walmart has systematically bribed Mexican officials in order to obtain permits during its expansion in that country. As a result of that story, and as a first step, Elijah Cummings, Democrat of Maryland, and Henry Waxman, Democrat of California, sent a letter to Walmart CEO requesting an in-person meeting with company officials by April 27th. The letter to Mr. Duke heavily cited the New York Times investigation, which also alleged that Walmart shut down an internal investigation into the bribery in order to keep the news from surfacing. Oh, my God, it sounds like Rupert Murdoch organization. Representative Cummings wrote The Huffington Post in an email statement, quote, the allegations that Walmart officials in Mexico may have broken U.S. laws by bribing officials to get their stores built faster raises serious concerns. But I'm even more alarmed, Cummings went on, by reports that top company executives in the U.S. tried to cover all this up. We need to ensure that U.S. corporations fully comply with the law, and we need to determine the full scope of these alleged abuses, end quote. The only part that I find interesting is how Mr. Cummings was able to write, we need to ensure that U.S. corporations fully comply with the law without choking.
radio matters here.
Before the hour, and once again, this hour is being sponsored by Tim in L.A. His message, thanks, Mike, Kathy, and Ms. Molly for reading my diatribes on the air for so many years. I appreciate it. Your show is very important. Also, on April 28th, in the desert of Central California, the 43rd anniversary of the Manzanar pilgrimage. This is in remembrance of the concentration camps during World War II. For more information, go to tinyurl.com/nomorecamps. tinyurl.com/nomorecamps. And please, Tim includes support. Margot Pays is Independent News, which is insightoutnews.org, by visiting her site and donating also. Thank you, Tim, for the sponsorship very much. So, Walmart. Investigation into the bribery that Walmart is alleged to have paid. But this is, I don't know why. Well, I do know why. There is a law in the books. That'll soon disappear. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. That hack's days are numbered. It's a federal law that prohibits bribery of foreign officials for any reason. And two Democrats now are launching an investigation into the Walmart bribery scandal. Watch the Republican resistance to that. Oh, my God. But one of the Democrats, Elijah Cummings, a Democrat of Maryland, said in an email statement to the Huffington Post, quote, I'm even more alarmed by reports that top company executives in the U.S. tried to cover up these abuses. We need to ensure that U.S. corporations fully comply with the law. I mean, when I read that, I just, are you kidding? Come on, Representative Cummings. I mean, that's an honorable thing to state for the record. It's also a punchline in a joke. And we all know this. U.S. corporations fully comply with what law? They make the law. And when they determine they want to break it, they break it. This is just one that they haven't gotten rid of yet. This is the one, by the way, that will eventually ensnare this old bastard Rupert Murdoch. When they finally get him on this side of the pond, the way they are getting his top executives and his family members on the other side of the pond. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Anyway, as part of their investigation, these two Democrats are also contacting Walmart executives named by the New York Times, including Walmart's former director of corporate investigations and the former general counsel of Walmart International, who both helped lead the company's internal probe into this bribery. They are also contacting a former attorney in Walmart de Mexico's real estate department, who is interviewed extensively by the Times. Why should it be a shock? I mean, I guess it's only a shock when you actually see a major newspaper in the United States go after something like this. Now, it's a win-win for the New York Times. This might be another Pulitzer Prize for their investigative reporters. I would say within, I don't know, a week or maybe two, depending on the spinmeisters at Walmart, depending on their decision as to how to handle this. Do you do a modified hangout? What were the words of Nixon's advisors, Haldeman and Ehrlichman? Modified limited hangout? Or do you tell the truth? Do you fight back? What do you do? Depending on how that conversation goes in the upper echelons of Walmart, One of the possible outcomes is a $250,000 full-page ad in the New York Times, you see, where Walmart addresses their customers, and it'll be something to the effect, Walmart will continue to provide American consumers with the highest quality, lowest cost products available because we have deep and abiding respect and love for our American customers. As a matter of fact, for all of our customers all over the world, while there may have been some untoward dealings where it concerned our building our outlets in Mexico, blah, 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 blah. You know how to go. And, of course, the Times will rake in $250,000 or whatever, full-page ad. Depends on whether or not it's a color ad, a full color, partial color, black and white. So they may win a Pulitzer, and they'll get the money from Walmart. Because where's Walmart going to advertise? Well, Washington Post? Yeah, that'll work. Jesus, God. But the idea that Americans are shocked, I tell you. I sound like Captain Renault, gambling here in this place. Was it Renault who said that, or was it Rick? Who said that? I don't know either. I bet you I have an answer momentarily. But to act shocked about American corporations violating the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Oh, please, for God's sake. Check some of the, what about the major oil companies and their dealings in Nigeria and their dealings in Ecuador? Now, the other story that is, I think, important to note is there appears to be the right-wing scum are getting restless now that Breitbart has gone to hell. Who's left to organize these phony ass attacks on organizations in this country that help poor people or help people who need assistance, like Acorn did, like Planned Parenthood does? According to Huffington Post, a string of suspicious incidents at Planned Parenthood clinics across the country are giving Planned Parenthood reason to believe that anti-abortion activists are targeting it in a new sting operation. According to Planned Parenthood spokesperson, clinics in at least 11 states have reported 24 or more so-called hoax visits over the past several weeks in which a woman walks into the clinic, claims to be pregnant, and before any kind of a test or anything, she asks a particular pattern. All these different women around the country, provocative questions about sex-selective abortions. Huh? Such as how soon she can find out the gender of the fetus, by what means, and whether she can schedule an abortion if she's having a girl. How about that? And it's a pattern going on. Oh, it's just coincidence. It couldn't be these right-wing scum, could it? It's just all of a sudden, women across the country, I want a sex-selective abortion, especially if it's a girl. Really? Oh, my goodness. Well, step right up, sweetie. Let's see what we can do. Now, privacy laws prohibit Planned Parenthood from offering specific details about the visits and where they have occurred. But the incidents are so unusual and so similar to each other that obviously they've raised concerns about the organization's executives, Planned Parenthood executives, that the visits are being recorded. Yeah, I would think that Planned Parenthood at this point, since they know they are under attack by the neo-fascist right in this country, that no matter who comes in, no matter for what, just video record the entire event. Why not? I know what that means. I do. It means that the swine, the scum, the right wing pigs that are just making this country putrid, that they will have gotten some sort of a victory. Ha ha ha! We make them record everybody now. Ha ha ha! What do you think, Breitbart? Can you hear me down there in hell? What do you think, Breitbart? So now, it would make sense for Planned Parenthood to record everything. Just, you know, in case. The spokesman for Planned Parenthood said, for years, opponents of reproductive health and Planned Parenthood have engaged in secret videotaping tactics with fictitious patient scenarios and selective editing in an attempt to promote misinformation about Planned Parenthood and our services. She goes on, as with the prior instances, we anticipate that once again, this group, likely in coordination with a broad range of anti-abortion leaders, will soon launch a propaganda campaign with the goal of discrediting Planned Parenthood and ultimately restricting women's health. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. This hour has been sponsored by Tim in L.A., whose message, thank you, Mike, Kathy, and Miss Molly for reading my diatribe on the air for so many years. I appreciate it. Your show is very important. Also, on April 28th, in the desert of Central California, the 43rd anniversary of the Manzanar pilgrimage. This is in remembrance of the concentration camps during World War II. For more information, go to tinyurl.com/nomorecamps. And please support Margot Pay's independent news site, www.insightoutnews.org. Insightoutnews.org. Or visit her site and donate also. Thanks, Tim. Planned Parenthood. Now, according to Planned Parenthood, the most likely group behind this campaign of walking in and saying, hi, I'd like to have a sex selective abortion. Can you help me? How soon will you be able to detect the gender of the fetoid? And if it is a female type fetoid, I would like to have it whisked away from my precious womb. Can you handle this for me, please? Now, that would raise a little suspicion, don't you think? So, Planned Parenthood has been getting this type of inquiry in as many as 11 different states, two dozen or more so-called hoax visits by various women who come in and ask the same question. And Planned Parenthood says the most likely group behind this is an anti-abortion bunch of freaks called Live Action. Live Action! Hey, now we go back to Live Action here on the ice. The, who do we have here? The, right, we're back here. Here they come down the line. There's a shot at him. Block it! Live Action? Really? They have a history, by the way, of paying actors to walk into Planned Parenthood clinics and act out various controversial scenarios in an attempt to catch Planned Parenthood staffers doing something illegal or immoral. Now, you remember the recent operation involving actors posing as pimps and prostitutes engaged in human trafficking and seeking birth control, STD testing, and other family planning services, huh? And then Live Action put out these heavily edited videos and tried to make it look like Planned Parenthood was complicit in sex trafficking. Oh, yeah, that's going to happen. Who is behind that one? Hey, Andy, down there in hell.
Was that you?
No answer.
Andrew!
Oh, he must be sleeping. Boop-boop-boop-boo. Or was it somebody named O'Keefe? Oh, well. Planned Parenthood says they have no proof that live action is behind the current series of encounters. This follows their pattern exactly. A spokes geek for live action would not confirm whether the group was behind the newest Sting. The spokes geek said, quote, as you can understand, live action does not comment on any investigations until after public release. Investigations? Really? Is that what you call this? Well, I'll be damned. Now, spotlighting the issue of sex-selective abortions is an increasingly common tactic that the anti-abortion community has been using lately to gin up the war on women around Planned Parenthood and to galvanize the brain-dead, stupid-ass social conservatives. That's right-wing trolls who just, what am I supposed to do today? Oh, today I'm supposed to sign a petition that Planned Parenthood is full of communist lesbians. Okay, where do I sign? Okay, right there, good. Okay, you want some money? That's an investigation. Okay. National Right to Life President Rabba wrote in a recent opinion column, quote, in 2010, more than 9 out of 10 Planned Parenthood services going specifically to pregnant women were abortion. Roughly half of those abortions are performed on unborn girls. Well, I mean, how many... When you flip a penny, how many times you get heads and how many times you get tails? Well, if you have 100 abortions, I guess more than half would be on female, potentially female fetoids, because potentially more fetoids, if they become real persons, are female. Right? Planned Parenthood condemns seeking abortions on the basis of the gender of the fetus. But that doesn't matter. We're dealing with right-wing neo-Nazis here. Now, the problem of sex selection abortion has been widely documented in Southeast Asia. Yeah, okay. I don't know. What's next? What are these right-wing crazy people going to try to find about Planned Parenthood next? That they actually, they take the aborted fetoids and sell them to a sausage maker? I mean, is that next? We'll be back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. Just when you would imagine there's nothing else Republicans do to show their complete contempt for, fear of, and disdain toward women, they rise up out of the underbrush with the bone in their nose, and here they come again. Here comes another attack by these primitive freaks. Up to this point, congressional Republicans have demonstrated clearly that they don't have an understanding of, nor compassion for, reproductive health services. They don't get it. You know, they hear the word abortion, and there's an automatic reaction that comes from the political and the Christian right. If they hear the word privacy, women's right to privacy, that scares the hell out of them. Oh, what are they going to do in there? So this week, the Senate is going to take up the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, something that was passed in 1994, first year of the full year, really. Well, no, second year of the first Clinton administration. The Violence Against Women Act. Now, you would think, wouldn't you, that there would be no discussion here, just be an automatic reauthorization. Apparently, this has to be reauthorized every 5 years or so, or 10 years, or 6, or 3, or 9, or 12. I don't know. I guess the idea being at some point, the 99% of the legislative branch that is men, or 95%, or whatever the hell it is, that at some point they'll say, well, I don't think we'll reauthorize it this year. Let's go ahead and go back to violence against women. I don't get the reauthorization part, but it's okay. Don't write me an email and tell me, explain it to me. I just don't need to know. All I know is in 1994 there was a law passed titled Violence Against Women Act that made it a crime regarding domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking. Now, it's up for reauthorization, and as the Times says over the weekend, previous reauthorizations in 2000 and 2005 sailed through Congress with very little opposition. If there was opposition, it came from right-wingers, but very little. The bill before the full Senate now received not a single Republican vote when it was approved by the Judiciary Committee in February. Now, think about that. This is just reauthorization. This is not a new bill. This is nothing in here that's going to bite white men on the ass when they don't expect it. Poor little things. This is a reauthorization vote. Not a single Republican voted for it when it came in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee in February. Now, it was introduced for reauthorization by that committee's Democratic chairman, Senator Pat Leahy, and an Idaho Republican who is not on the committee, Michael Crapo. The renewal measure attracted 61 co-sponsors, including 8, oh my God, 8 Republicans. Now, that means there should be sufficient support for this reauthorization to pass. As the Times says, the main drama lies in whether opponents, what the hell? An opponent to the Violence Against Women Act? What? Now, I would just ask women who now represent a majority of the vote in this country, how would you allow a male who would not vote for reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, how would you allow him to, why would you allow this freak to stay in office? Shame on you. Shame on women. And I don't care. It doesn't matter. Democrat, Republican, I don't care what you are. Gay, lesbian, straight, hetero, married, single, childless. It doesn't matter. You're going to sit back on your haunches and you're going to allow male members of the United States Senate to sit there on their asses and say, no, I'm not going to vote for reauthorization of that. Yes, you are, aren't you? Of course you are. Because you don't participate in the system anymore. You don't, actually, you probably don't care. Okay, so be it. But just remember, every single Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee refused to vote to reauthorize this back in February. Not one. But since the Senate is still in the hands of the Democrats, it doesn't matter. There are enough Democrats on that committee to pass it anyway. Send it on to the full Senate. Okay, now, according to the Times, the main drama now lies in whether opponents will insist on a cloture vote, which requires 60 senators. That cloture means closing off any debate. Now, what debate? What kind of filibuster? What could there be about the Violence Against Women Act? I'll leave it up to your imagination, which is far more elastic than my vocabulary. But you can imagine, can you not? Knowing these crap heads, these punk-ass white male Republicans, you can imagine what the debate might be. So they need 60 votes for cloture. The fact that the renewal measure has attracted 61 co-sponsors, including 8 Republicans, means, okay, very slim chance that it's going to go through. They need that vote before final passage. And whether they will succeed in amending the bill to eliminate or weaken provisions they find offensive. There are going to be Republicans, when this vote comes up for the full Senate, where they say, wait a second, I don't like that part about X, Y, and Z. I want to change it to A, B, and C. Now, how do you think they're going to change it? Do you think they're going to make it tougher on men who beat women? Do you think they're going to make it tougher on men who sexually assault women? Or you think they're going to make it tougher on domestic violence aspects? Or do you think they're going to try to loosen it? You tell me. These are right-wing, white male, Republican, evangelical Christians, almost to the last man. What do you think they're going to try to do with the Violence Against Women Act? So, there are provisions in the Violence Against Women Act that extend the law's protections to same-sex couples. There are provisions that modestly increase the availability of special visas for undocumented immigrants who are victims of domestic violence elsewhere. And there are parts of the bill that have expanding efforts to reach indigenous tribes in this country, American Indian tribes. A spokesman for Mitt Romney said he favors reauthorization of the law, but declined to say where he stands on these disputed provisions. Now, why would there be any dispute whatsoever? Well, I mean, same-sex couples. Oh, my God. Same-sex couples? We're going to give people involved in a same-sex couple thingy protection? God doesn't want that. You can just hear them, can't you? If Republican opponents, as the Times concludes, insist on cutting back on rights and limiting services to vulnerable women and other domestic violence victims, these Republicans will have only themselves to blame if voters rebuke them at the polls. Well, that sounds real nice, but we don't rebuke anybody anymore. We're not even aware of bills like this going through. The people who want to bring the hammer down on women, though, they are aware. And they will be making their voices heard. What about you, truth seeker?
action starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, I honestly don't have any answer, and I just wonder sometimes if anybody does, why white male Christian legislators on a state level and the federal level constantly legislate in a manner that hurts women and children. Does anybody have any answer to that? Well, you know, without the standard cliche kind of answers that I can come up with myself. Well, you know, they believe in male power, male dominance, and they put those women in their place. They're afraid of their vaginas, or they don't like children. I mean, you know, you can come up with all that stuff. But by the same token, they will, these white male religiously conservative legislators on the federal and state level will have no problem passing legislation that enhances gun rights. So on the one hand, you have concentrated effort to undo any progressive legislation for women and children and to stymie or stop altogether any proposed legislation that would help women and children. I mean, some of the stuff that gets passed during the Clinton years and the Bush 1 years and now efforts still being made in the Obama years, some of the legislation passed is just almost violently anti-woman and child. I mean, really ugly stuff here in the land of the free and the home of the half-wits. It's astonishing to me. And at the same time, the efforts, legislative efforts, to expand, well, let me rephrase that, to knock down whatever's left of any kind of sensible gun control laws, not that there are any to begin with, not in this country. No, not here. So the connection to me, and the third leg of this crazy stool is religious. Any attempt to rein in this religious insanity that just pours out from the mouths of these white evangelical male legislators, state and federal, any attempt to rein it in is met with screams of religious bias. Oh, you're anti-God. So you've got those, you know, those are the three things that keep jumping in my face, and I can't figure out how the three connect unless I enter into that crazy realm where most of these white male, conservative, Christian, evangelical legislators live. And that's some kind of a land where I don't know. Women are, they're not second-class citizens. They're not even considered in a class. They're just there. Children are a huge irritation. But guns, oh, God, guns. Children, feh. Women, guns. I can't figure that one out. And every day, pretty much when you pick up the paper, you see one more attempt by right-wing, evangelical, conservative, Christian legislators on the state level and the federal level to make it even worse. Take away more of the social safety net that is strictly for women and children. Whether it is the Children's Health Insurance Program, whether it is funding for Planned Parenthood, whether it is funding for women, infant, and children's feeding programs, whether it's for school lunches, whether it, you see what I'm saying? It just goes on and on. You have to come to the conclusion, if you're paying attention, that every single right-wing, evangelical, Christian, Republican, male of the Caucasoid race hates women and children for some reason and wants to punish them, endlessly punish them, kick them, degrade them, denigrate them, treat them like dirt. Why? I just want to know why. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you right-wing suckers. I just want to know why. Why do you do that? Is that what your God teaches you? What? Where? When? Why do you do that? Why? There's no answer. You half-wits can't give me an answer. You know you can't. But if I were you, I would hang my head in shame. You should. You should walk around constantly, you white male legislators of the evangelical persuasion. You should just, I don't know how you face yourselves in the morning to shave or brush your teeth or adjust your I don't know, your hairpiece. I don't know how you do it. And the reflection of the person staring back at you is you. I don't know. I don't know how you do it. Just thought I'd toss that in. You can toss it right back out. We have a break here. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Talking about a couple of minutes ago, I don't get that weird intersection of gun rights and taking away or denying equal protection under the law or rights that, you know, for women and children, rights to a decent life, but guns. You know, if a woman wants a right to privacy to make a decision with her physician, you will have thousands of legislators across the country who will say no. If a woman wants a right to carry a gun in her purse to shoot someone, you have thousands of legislators across the country who will say yes. Kind of weird. Ah, maybe it's me. last night, I watched the Discovery Channel, their episode On Thin Ice, which was part of the series called Frozen Planet. Now, there were seven preceding episodes. And it's my understanding, I haven't seen them because they usually come on right when we're doing this program. Obviously on Sunday night, when we're not doing it, I had a chance to see On Thin Ice. It was narrated by the Richard Attenborough. And oddly enough, They talked about, we can tell by the title, On Thin Ice, how the ice sheet at the North Pole and Greenland and the Arctic Ocean is thinning, and the collapsing ice shelves, and the photography was astonishing. I don't know how they do it. National Geographic, Discovery, camera operators who go around the planet and come up with this fantastic footage, high-definition footage that is just, oh, my God. Frozen Planet was a seven-hour series that got millions of viewers to the Discovery Channel in recent weeks. And the whole point is to show the Earth in very extreme situations. Frozen Planet. And part of what it shows is that while the poles of the planet are violently cold, there are warming trends that are endangering, well, everything. You know, the camera can only show us what's the polar bear populations are in danger. Huge chunks of ice breaking off the ice shelf, Greenland and Antarctica. But they can't show us the subtle stuff, the release of methane into the air, the warming that is occurring. It's my understanding that planetary warming is occurring at the most rapid pace at the two poles. You know, I watch this stuff and I'm caught by the fantastic photography. And I get caught up in that and kind of miss the point of what this represents and what it means. Now, Frozen Planet was very careful to stay away from the idea of global warming directly. Alec Baldwin, who narrated the first seven episodes, says categorically, quote, the ends of the Earth are changing, you know, the North and South Pole. But what the series never talks about is why? Why? Hey, Alec, why is it changing? Now, we know why. The vast majority of scientists agree that human activities are changing the Earth, the climate, the weather patterns, especially at the poles. And the majority, vast majority of scientists believe that this requires immediate attention 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, today. And, of course, nothing's being done and nothing will be done. We're just not going to do it. Human beings are not going to do it. We are not. Do you get that? Do you understand that? I mean, recycle your beer cans until your ass falls off, but that's not going to have anything to do with global climate change. It isn't. Organize cleanup events and through your neighborhood, in the creeks and the streams and the drainage ditches, and get all the garbage out. Oh my God, look at all that stuff. Eww! And haul it away. It's going to have nothing to do with the fact that our nest is heating up until the point is going, we're going to reach a point where it becomes unlivable.
Oh, Malloy, what the hell are you talking about?
Well, you'll be dead when that happens. You will be dead. And so will I. But what about your kids and mine, your grandkids and mine? You know?
Yeah, you can't think about that. No, I guess not.
So I'm watching this thing. I'm watching this On Thin Ice, which was, it was supposed to be originally planned to show this episode on April 15th, immediately preceding the seventh and final episode of The Frozen Planet. But earlier this month, apparently, the decision was made to delay On Thin Ice until yesterday, Earth Day, and call that the season finale. The fact that global warming was left out of the discussion was noticed by a lot of people. I mean, how do you, like somebody said, talking about a warming planet and the effect that it's having and leaving out global warming and how it is brought about by humans would be the same as talking about lung cancer. You know, if you did a documentary about lung cancer and left out the part about cigarettes. That's what Bill McKibben, the climate change activist and scholar, said. He went on to say, quote, there's no scientific mystery here. The poles are changing because we're burning so much carbon. Now, executives at the Discovery Channel countered that argument, according to the New York Times, by saying their approach, you know, just showing what's going on without giving it context, would gain the attention of viewers who wouldn't watch a straightforward documentary about climate change science. You know, because why not? Well, because they're white. Here we go again. They're white, male, evangelical, Christian, right-wing, Republican legislators have told them that it's not happening, along with all the psycho bastards on the Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast organization, plus the usual clutch of half-wits and morons who control the airwaves in this country. Oh, there's no global warming! So, the series, as beautiful as it was, is now being called A Lost Opportunity for Climate Change Education. And as Greg Bryan, a television writer for Yahoo, wrote earlier this month, that by sidestepping the climate change science involved, Discovery created a perception, quote, that even bringing it up will bring a bevy of angry letters, protesters, or worse, defectors from ever watching the particular cable channel again. End quote. I'll never watch your channel again. You're putting that left-wing liberal propaganda crap. I'm going to write to your advertiser. Blah, 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 blah. This is what it's come to? Yes. Yes. So even though the vast majority of scientists agree that human activities are influencing changes to the climate, and even though they believe that the situation we're dealing with requires serious attention, immediate attention, that scientific consensus was totally missing from Frozen Planet. As the Times says, for reasons that shed light on the dilemma of commercial television, where the pursuit of ratings can sometimes clash with the quest for environmental or scientific education, particularly in issues like, my goodness, global warming. Because there are half-wits and morons on the other side of this conversation. Well, that's just Al Gore trying to get rich. Ha, ha, ha. There ain't no global warming. God's got everything under control. This is nonsense. Vanessa Berlewitz is the series producer, and she said a couple of things in the interview I'll share with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. So back to this Discovery Channel series, Frozen Planet. And last night I watched on thin ice, the allusion there being that we're all on thin ice regarding climate change, but of course nobody will come out and say it. Vanessa Berlewitz, who is the series producer for Discovery, said in an interview that the scientific theories regarding global climate change, quote, would have undermined the strength of an objective documentary and would then have become utilized by people with political agendas. She added, I feel that we're trying to educate mass audiences and get children involved, and we didn't want people saying, don't watch this show because it has a slant on climate change, end quote. Isn't that insane? Isn't that insane? I'm not talking about Vanessa Berlewitz. She has to work with what she's got. She understands. She works for a television network. She understands the crazy goddamn attitude out there by these right-wing crazy people. So that approach, as the Times puts it, that approach, anticipating criticism and tiptoeing around it accordingly, is a reflection of the political and ideological fury that infuses many conversations about climate change. Why would there be fury? Oh, because it doesn't say in the Bible that God's going to do this. There's no climate change. What has Limbaugh been telling his brain dead, his 10 million brain dead bobbleheads for years? Oh, that's just a liberal plot. Why, of course it is, Rush. That's all it is. You disgusting piece of human waste. That's all it is. Some scientists say that The politicization of the subject has succeeded in causing governments, corporations, media outlets to shy away from any kind of open discussion about this issue. Not even a conversation. Nothing. While it's actually happening, every single week, more people are smashed to death in Tornado Alley. Because of monster tornadoes that have no business being there now and back during the winter. And these halfwits keep saying, well, God didn't kill me. Oh, killed my neighbor, didn't kill me. Oh, Lord, what are we going to do? Idiots. Morons. Now, here's the terrible part. The people who are dismissive of human effect on climate change make up about 10% of the American population. According to this guy, Anthony Lisarowitz, who's the director of the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. According to his research, only about 10%. That means 90% of the American population is not dismissive on the human effect on climate change. But the 10% drown out the broader conversation about the subject, making themselves, the 10%, seem more numerous than they are. And the end result, there's no discussion. Can you imagine what would happen? Truth seeker, here, put this to the test. Let's assume your kid, like my kid, goes to a public school. What would happen? What would happen if your kid came home from public school tomorrow and said, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, guess what? We're learning about how carbon dumping into the atmosphere is causing the planet to warm and that we're all in real trouble unless we do something. Woo! Can you imagine what would happen? I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the other parents whose kids go to that school. Oh, my God. They would show up with their Bibles at the next PTA. They wouldn't even wait for the next PTA meeting. They would grab their Bibles and storm the principal's office. What are you teaching my child? Science? What's this Al Gore stuff? There's no global warming. What are you talking about? But there really is, and it's really getting worse. And then, of course, those crazed anti-science, superstitious, cowardly Bible thumpers would scream at the principal again and say, "Don't you dare! I'm going to have you. I'm going to have your job. I'm going to defund your school system. I'm going to boycott the people who might be contributing a few advertising dollars to your school because I voted for legislators who defunded the whole damn school system to begin with because I'm not paying any more property taxes. And besides, all these kids need to know is in the Bible." Huh? Sound familiar? Sure. So I sat there last night and watched the what was to be the final episode on Thin Ice. And yesterday was Earth Day. And the photography was gorgeous. Oh, my God. And when you watch these huge, I mean, billion, 10 billion ton chunks of ice breaking off of, as Richard Attenborough calls them, glaciers, huge, the size of the UK, for God's sake. Chunks, monster, iceberg, that means ice mountain. And the photography was beautiful, and the polar bears are struggling, and orcas now are in the Arctic Ocean. They don't belong there, but see, they don't belong there because they have these huge dorsal fins, and they can't come up out of the... Oh, never mind. It sure was a beautiful series. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, True Seekers, Mike.